Hello, dreamers, thinkers, and doers. Welcome to Ideate with Florian. In this season, we discover where good ideas come from, whether it's for a new feature, product, or company. I'm your host, Florian Hoornaar. For over 25 years, I work with small and medium-sized companies in engineering, sales, and management. During that time, I connected with many professionals to grow together. That makes me excited to explore the journeys of our guests with you. So let's dive in. Episode 6. Celebrating bad ideas at fuck-up nights with Carlos Zimbron. In this episode of the Ideate with Florian podcast, we welcome Carlos Zimbron, founder of Fuck-Up Nights. We discuss the global success of Fuck-Up Nights, a movement born from a casual barbecue in Mexico City. The initiative, now in around 260 cities, promotes embracing failure as a universal learning experience. Carlos highlights the importance of taking risks and adapting to change, emphasizing the movement's organic growth driven by a supportive community. The conversation also touches on challenges faced during growth and how to handle this. Despite hurdles, the movement thrives with a focus on vulnerability and honest sharing. Carlos concludes by envisioning the initiative's future, aiming to disappear as an organization when no longer needed, having successfully reshaped the global perspective on failure. Welcome, Carlos.
Hi, Florian. Thank you very much for the invitation.
I'm so happy to be talking to you because you started something that really became successful by talking about things that are really not successful. So it's a very interesting paradox. Yeah. I can introduce Fuck Up Nights, but it's probably more entertaining if you introduce Fuck Up Nights. And what is it?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that an idea that came from the concept of failure became now like a success. For us, it's kind of difficult to explain that all the time, that we're having success through failure. But yeah, we started, basically the idea came out in a barbecue. We were kind of drunk one night. We were drinking some Mexican mezcal in Mexico City, because in that time I was, I don't know, like 25, 26 years old, and we were like, you know, creating things, and we are like these creative minds, like with a lot of ideas and a lot of stamina and everything, and trying to do whatever we were excited about. And we were in that barbecue, you know, that idea that came out after a couple of drinks, and in that moment sounds like great ideas, but then the day after they are not that good. This one, it was a good idea, and we realized that we had a potential project in hands the day after, in the hangover, you know, like talking about the day before, and we said like, we have something here. I don't know what it exactly is, but we have something here. The idea actually was, we came out with the name the same day of the barbecue. That's why it was like so appealing, because we already had, you know, like the whole concept in 2 seconds. So we decided to try it between the five of us. We are five co-founders. In that moment, we decided just to share our own failures and try the concept in a really small scale. It was crazy how that moment was it was super good. It was like really funny and also kind of sad and empathetic, and you know, like a lot of feelings coming from the story of my friends, you know, the friends that I knew for a long time, and it was the first time we were listening that stories from us. So yeah, it was nice.
So the idea is that of the Fuck Up Nights now is that some person goes on stage and shares his failure, his fuck up, with a whole bunch of strangers in a 5-10 minute presentation. Yeah. Was that also the format that you thought about on that barbecue and that next day that you did it with a group of friends?
Yeah, like after that first experience of proto fuck up nights, you know, we decided to create a format like immediately, like because we had jobs, you know, like our daily jobs. So we decide to make it simple, to keep it simple in the most extreme way. And we just decide this format you mentioned. It was 5 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes, a really short period of time. Then 10 images, and every image it wasn't a presentation. It was more like a guidance for your story, because we are here, we are storytellers in that way. We are trying to share a story, and that images were like just helping the storytelling. And that was it. The first Fuck Up Night we had, we weren't trying to do a global movement in that moment. It was just like one night in Mexico City, you know, like that was our expectation in that moment. And it became like a really great night with 30 people, really small event, you know, some beers in the side, projector. We insist a lot with friends to came because the idea was like, what? I don't know. I don't think it's necessarily something that I need in my life, you know, right, hearing right. about failures.
Yeah.
So it was kind of difficult, but it was magical in that way also. Like the people that were there were super, at the end of the night, were thrived about the concept and the vulnerability, the catharsis, everything, you know.
Right. And what I find so amazing about your story is that it's not like you took months to come up with an idea. You know, it's just the idea was there immediately. There were some creative fluids involved, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But immediately you had an idea, you had a concept, you had a name. Fuck Up Night, you next day you had a format for it. So it went so quickly that people spent months and years finding an idea. It almost seems like the idea found you.
Yeah, totally. I think that was part of our success, that we just made it and we didn't think about it and we didn't ask if it was a good idea to anyone,
right,
just us.
Right, right.
You know, like, of course, a lot of problems came after when we became successful and we had more than 260 cities around the world. That's a problem. You know, that idea that started, you know, like really fast and you have to change everything and you have to adapt everything to really manage global movement and a company and everything.
Right,
you know?
Right.
To pass from that moment of serendipity and eureka moment and to become something more formal and real.
Taking it from there, the brand name itself, Fuck Up Night, there's a rebellious tone to it. Was it also a deliberate choice or... let's just fuck it with this. It's a fuck up. Let's go with this. Or how did that...
Yeah, we were... The name came so fast, so we didn't think much about it. We liked it, and we thought it was punk enough for us in that moment, you know? Like, it was kind of anti-establishment in some ways, yes. But we didn't think about that much. We were just young people trying to create something new and irreverent and different. And I think that's the DNA of young people.
Right.
We followed that hunch and that feeling in the gut that it was okay. We didn't think much about it. And we have a lot of surprises after that when people have problems with our name, you know, like, because at the beginning it was with our friends. And it was okay for them. Like, it was cool, actually.
Right.
But then you start talking or try to work with organizations, with corporations, with everything, and try to launch or write a book with a editorial. And it was a problem, you know, it became a problem. Even in social media, like, we have a lot of problems there with algorithm and the... We cannot use ads. We cannot buy ads because we have a sort... In our name, so
yeah, so you'd have to rebrand to Screw Up Nights.
Yeah, and we don't like that, but sometimes we have to avoid the name in some ways and just make it happen. But at the beginning, we didn't think much about the name. It was just like fun and cool.
So, with how many people did you start that first? Was it a group of five or six? How many did you say it was?
Exactly, we are five co-founders, and we started the first probably one year and a half. We were just like the five of us doing everything and trying to manage our daily jobs with side project of Fuck Up Nights, and then we start growing as a team.
And can you take us through that how did that go from that casual hangout on a barbecue to now a few years later a global phenomenon? Some of the highlights, the shift to bigger venues, leap of faith towards internationalization. First was Spain, I believe. How did that go?
Yeah, I love to have a better answer that puts me in a like super genius super genius place.
Okay.
But it wasn't like that. Like, we just keep organizing the events, you know, like, and keep organizing and organizing, because it was super fun and we had a really great time. It was every month, the last Thursday of every month. And one day, someone from Spain wrote us an email and said, like, hey, I read you in a blog here in Spain about your concepts. And we didn't know about the blog. Like, someone just wrote that blog post because he visited the event in Mexico City. And this person in Spain wrote us interested on the format. And she said, like, hey, I want to bring the format to Spain. And then we realized, like, wow, like, we have something here and we have to answer her. We didn't know what to do. And in that moment, like, it was like a reality check, and a positive reality check, you know, like, you have something that it's growing and you have to take care of it and you have to start, like, making decisions about it. And because it was a thing about just decide what we want to do. We want to keep it just like in our little patio in Mexico City with friends, or we want to take to the next level or next steps. And we decided to make a manual, you know, like in a Google Docs Word document. And we wrote a manual and we put the rules, like what we want, what we are expecting, and what we can, like, give. And it was like a kind of a negotiation at the beginning with that person and with us. It was like a way to understand and put in paper what we are thinking about the project and what we want to do. So we decided to make it free at the beginning, and, you know, like, just by using our logo and our name and, you know, that kind of things. And the process started in that moment and grow a lot after that. Like, after that, a lot of people, we did in that moment, just to give you an idea, in that moment we didn't have social media accounts for Pokemon Nights. We start that and we communicate to the people that we are, like, licensing in some way the concept.
And did you have a goal or an intention that you had at that moment? I mean, it can be realized that if one person knocks on your door and says, hey, I want to do this in Spain, that your immediate reaction is like, hey, if we can do it in Spain, we can also do it in Italy. You can also do it in the US and Australia. Like, is that something that immediately crosses your mind then? Or how did that go?
Yeah, as an idea, like, we didn't have another inquiries from other cities, you know, but it was an idea, like, how we are gonna, now we are doing this. It's a question, you know, like, we are doing licensing or now I'm using the word licensing. In that moment, we didn't think about that in that terms. So yeah, at the beginning it was like, yeah, could be something. And before we start doing something about it, the people start communicating with us, start, like, asking us for bring the concept to their city. So the movement was faster than us. People from Guadalajara in Mexico, from Monterrey, from other cities in Mexico especially, and then South America, and then more Europe, like after Spain, a lot of people from Europe. And at the end of the year, we were in around 30 cities, you know, like...
Amazing. And how many cities currently host Fuck Up Nights?
Around 260.
Okay.
In 2019, we were in 300 cities. But after pandemics, it was like kind of a mess in that sense. Yeah,
yeah, definitely a change happened then. Do you also have then a perspective on, like, cultures around the world? Are Fuck Up Nights different in Europe than they are in Latin America or in the US or in the Middle East? How does that differ?
Yeah, we realized that. Like, at the beginning, we were like, Fuck Up Nights is perfect for Mexico, you know? It's a Mexican thing, because Mexico is a really difficult country in terms of it's struggling all the time, you know, like as a Latin American country. And we thought that in that terms, but then we realized that it's not, that failure is transversal and universal, and it's happening to all people around the world. Even if you are like a part, you are from a rich country or you are from a poor country, it doesn't matter. Like, it has to do with perspective, how you understand the world and what are your expectations about success, for example, or or a good life or happiness or whatever. So yeah, we realized that every country is going to have every nationality is going to have a different perspective. Even in Mexico, you know, it's not about only the country. Like, in Mexico are rich people and poor people, and they have different point of views about how failure is. And that reflect on the chapters in every city, you know, because probably someone from Taipei have their own, you know, like contextual and cultural characteristics, but probably he's very focused on tech startups because that's his background.
Right. Taipei, Taiwan, that's hardware, right? Tech. Yeah,
exactly. For example, no? And he's going to focus on that kind of stories.
Yeah.
Because this is the person that has the licensor, that's his background. And that's the interesting thing about Folk Up Nights, that it's a concept that it's super transversal, you know, like it's super horizontal. So it's going to accept every kind of industry, every kind of idea, because everyone have something to share about failure in every part of the world. So yeah, I think it's totally different. We, for example, it was like super interesting to find out that one of our most successful countries was Germany at the beginning.
Germany? I wouldn't expect that, yeah.
Exactly. And me neither, from even when I am from Mexico. So it was surprising, and we understand that. We understand that, like, failure is everywhere, basically. And
yeah, failure is everywhere, but the openness and the willingness to talk about that and the social stigma that goes with failure, that's perceived differently in different cultures.
Yeah, for example, in Japan, we don't have cities or licenses in Japan now. I think probably Tokyo was the last one a couple of years ago. But okay. It's a difficult place to share failure.
You have to admit that I tried something and I failed. Not it failed, but I failed. That distinction, right?
Exactly. And yeah, like because of the culture. And we had some people, you know, like brave people that try it and try to make a change about it. But yeah, it was difficult. Now I think the license is open. I'm not exactly sure, but yeah, that's interesting to analyze or to...
Okay. I see on your LinkedIn that you not only do Fuck Up Nights, but you also do other initiatives. Mm. How important do you see it to just keep taking risks and keep experimenting? And, you know, and if you do that a lot, you fail a lot because you try a lot, right? What's your perspective on that?
Yeah, like for me, it's the way I live, experimenting and trying new things. And taking risks. Yeah, like sometimes I didn't see the risks, and that's kind of a little bit of a problem. That it's better when you are like more aware of the risks. But I have another initiative. I have a co-working space also. I am an architect, so I had an architecture studio back in the day. Before I started this position as CEO in Folk Up Nights, I was just painting. I just decided to take a time for me and my painting, and this pig is not mine. In the back.
I was going to ask you about the painting behind your back.
No.
I mean, we're doing a podcast, so the listeners can't see it, but there's a very nice painting of a...
Yeah, no, it's not mine, sadly, but the thing is that, like, I was trying new different things because, I don't know, I consider myself as a creative person, and I don't like when you start your career, like your professional career, you decide to study something, no? Usually. And I just decided to study architecture. But I feel that I don't like only architecture in my life, you know? I like other things, and I'm interested in other things, in sports, in animals, in nature. And I don't know if I can have something, if I can work in something that is interesting for me, that's better. And that's why I always trying something new, or even when I have more stable position like this, I always thinking in my head, like, what's the next move? Even when that move is going to be like, I don't know, 5 years from now, 2 years from now, whatever. But it's because I'm taking this risk because I want to explore myself. I don't know if that makes sense. You know, like, it's not necessarily a business risk. The problem that I have is that I always try to make a business about my passions. And that's kind of difficult, you know, in for Fuck Up Nights, for the co-working space I have is more like a cultural space. It's not, it's more like a cultural focus space. So those are my passions, and I try to make that a living, you know. That's why I always taking risk in that way.
And how do you see, like, in my notes, I have a line that says the failure of not starting at all. I mean, if you start something, you can fail at what you start, but if you don't start anything, that's also a failure, right? That's not the problem that you have, then, I guess, because you just start.
Yeah, I always start, and I have more failures, more actual failures, you know, than most of the people, because I start a lot of things. And I'm okay with that. I just realized that if you try more, you're going to fail more. And that's it. It's statistics, you know, like, it's, if you try more, you're going to fail more. But if you don't try, also that feels more like a eternal failure. A lot of people that are like just waiting and just not doing anything. And, you know, they have probably a boring job, 9-to-5 job. And they are like thinking all the time about, I don't know, starting a company or starting whatever. And they just stay there. I think that failure is like, it's bigger, you know, it's eternal. Right. It becomes like, I don't know, like kind of difficult to understand, but it's there.
It's like if you start something and that something fails and that something fails. But if you don't start something, then you as a person, it more reflects on you of who you are.
Totally.
And if you start a lot of things, do you also finish a lot of things, or do you have a lot of lingering projects?
I have a lot of those. No, like.
And the reason I'm asking is because I'm wondering if you see like a project that you start and that you then don't finish. Do you see like the abandoning? Do you see that as a failure, or is it more like a conclusion? Like, I started. It is what it is, and I abandoned it, and I move on. That's just what it is. Or is that a failure?
No, it's a failure, but I don't necessarily like take that as a negative thing. I just, it's a natural thing, and it's part of our job, actually, in Fuck Up Nights. It's like to take the concept of failure to more like an even part of the conversation. It's not negative. It's not positive. It's neutral, and it's there. It's going to happen, and that's the way I take it. So in that way, it's interesting that I have like a
got a truck in the background, don't you?
Exactly.
That's the joy of recording podcasts, that things happen there.
The future of work is flexible. If you are being mandated to return to the office, fear not. There are things that you can do to create flexibility for yourself, and there are things that you can do to prepare for the inevitable flexibility that is coming your way. Collaboration Superpowers helps people and companies work better together from anywhere. And we've got a free remote working success kit to get you started. From personal user manuals to team agreements, virtual icebreakers, and more, download the Remote Working Success Kit at collaborationsuperpowers.com. We'll see you online.
Oh, it's already gone. Here we go.
Yeah, so I think failure is more like an even concept, and it's not like, it's more a neutral concept, not negative, not positive. That's why when I just finish one thing, or I don't finish something that I started, I consider a failure, but in a positive way, in a way that it's gonna help me, or in a way that probably I met someone through that process that it's gonna help me in the future. And also, trying things, it's part of, like, I'm an architect, and when you're a like designer, in any kind of designer, the mistake is present in all the process. So you are going to have a lot of mistakes, you know. You have to try to understand that mistakes are natural, and to find the, you try different, I don't know, like 50 different shapes of building. the 51 is going to be the one, probably the 50 before it's not going to help. And you have all the models there in your studio. But and a lot of architects like have a lot of love to that process, and they show off their models and their process and everything, because it's important to have that mistakes to arrive to the good one. So in my projects are the same.
And very early in the interview, you used the word catharsis,
mm-hmm.
which is sort of I'll let you explain it, what it means to you. I'm just wondering if it helps you to deal with those abandoned projects and learn from them and move on. What's your perspective on that?
The way I see catharsis is when you put out something that you have a difficult process or a difficult moment to process, is not only yours anymore, you know? When you share something in public with your friend, with your mother, with your partner, whatever, it's not only yours. Now it's part of it's in the world, it's outside in the world. Because a big problem of not sharing failure is that the problem is only in your head. It's not in other people's head, or the exchange that you can have with other people about solving that problem. But just to be vulnerable and open and take that out of your system. I think it's that. I think for me, catharsis is like take that big weight from you and put it in the world. And it's not like you can see it actually from outside with other perspective. And it's totally different when, I don't know, like I meditate a lot every day. Well, not a lot, but every day. And after I meditate, I write, I know, 10 minutes of writing. And that helps me a lot just to like take out that my crazy, without sense thoughts in my notebook. And now it's there and I can revisit it. And I think that's a good exercise. And that happens also with catharsis and with failure and with your problems, you know.
And how does that compare to the data, you know, social media, stories on LinkedIn, even worse, Instagram? I mean, everyone is always doing fantastic and phenomenal, and they had such a great time and everything went perfect. How does that compare to the benefits of this catharsis that you talk about?
Yeah, well, what happened in Focom Nights, it's the atmosphere that is totally different. Like, the people are there for listening about you fail and to clap you about that. So
it's the supportiveness of the community that is different.
Totally, because when you write something or share something in social media, you don't know what's gonna be the reaction. Like you can have like a really good reaction from people or not. Like, but in Fuck Up Nights, you're there and the people are there to listen to you, and not only to be sad, also to be happy or to laugh. The expressions and the feelings that came out from failure are totally diverse. So the environment there, it's very specific, you know, it's totally different from a like normal conference.
Yep.
And also it's supportive. I think we create a supportive community in that way.
And in the world of startups, there's this thing called open startup, where you candidly just talk about what you're doing, what you've learned, what you failed. That goes as far as your financials. And usually with startups, it's just how much money did we lose this month? There's also a risk of oversharing, you know, where you're too honest about, and not everyone will understand what you're doing. And not everything will be shared, especially if you put it on video or on posts for social media, where that supportive community is not necessarily there. How do you feel about that? Where does that stop? What is oversharing? When are you too transparent?
Well, yeah, I think, of course, like when you're communicating and you're talking, like depends on two, no? It's a two-way dynamic. And I think like that's why we create this format, short format, because we try to make a summary in just 10 minutes to share the important things and take out like the crap in some way. So just share the important things. And after the event, we create also a networking environment to share more or ask more or to have this close conversation from the people that are actually interested in. And I think that's the key part of communication. Like someone that it's interested in sharing and someone that is interesting on listening. And in social media, that's not necessarily the case, but you have your followers. Your followers are the people that are interested in you and you are interested in sharing. And that's how like you can like manage that process. But through Fuck Up Nights, I think it's very synthetic. The talks are very synthetic and we like that. But then we open the conversation through networking. Yeah.
So it's a multi-step process where in the first step you broadcast, hey, listen, this is the fuck up I had, which is basically the announcement of the talk. And then you have the talk itself where in broad strokes you explain what happens. And then there's the networking and then there's the one-on-one where you can go deeper and deeper.
Exactly.
So then you also adjust your openness to that community, everyone in the room and that one specific person you're talking with. That makes a lot of sense. Let's get back to more your entrepreneurial side. You've done a lot of these fuck up nights yourself. You've witnessed them around the world. You've seen a lot of entrepreneurs fail. If I go to the website of fuck up nights, there's how did I get fired? That's one section. There's another section called surviving entrepreneurship. So it's definitely something that you have to survive, I guess. How do you see that surviving aspect of entrepreneurship? You also mentioned with your own initiatives where you say, I'm just going to do it without realizing up front.
I think like every kind of entrepreneur endeavor are difficult, no? Have their own difficulties. And especially when like there are not the way you study entrepreneurship, it's not necessarily the most like agile way, you know, like because you have business schools and whatever, but those are like slow ways of learning because the world is faster than that, especially in technology. But so you are all the time trying to realize what is the best way to manage your projects, the process on your project or your business model or the product you have or whatever. And also you have more and more and more like tons of competition, even when it's not your competition, direct competition. Like you have a lot of noise out there. You are trying to shout and say something and it's difficult to be heard from the audience. So it's a constant struggling to become an entrepreneur because you are like changing, like you are pivoting all the time, zigzagging all the times.
Right.
That's why the word surviving works, because it's not like a straight line that you're like, well, yeah, this is not the best, but you are comfortable. No, you are always like changing sides and trying new different things and changing your concept or whatever. Like, I don't know.
Always responding to your environment and what's going on, what's happening, what's coming at you, right?
Totally, yeah. Totally. And yeah, at the end, if you don't do that, your company, your project, whatever, it's not going to survive financially. So yeah, I think it's I love trying something new and being an entrepreneur, but I also it's tiring a lot. Sometimes I wanna just have like a normal job, a 9 to 5 job, and that's it. It's tiring. Yeah.
And do you have like a top 5 or top 10 in your head of like the common entrepreneurial pitfalls that you've seen over and over at Fuck Up Nights?
The kind of stories that I like the most are the ones that are like trying their what they want in life, really, you know, that fail in that process. Because there are a lot of stories that I respect a lot, but they are more like I try a business and I fail my business. So, and that's it. That's
the story then.
Yeah. That's the story. And it's difficult and it's super, like, we appreciate a lot that because it needs a lot of vulnerability to share that and everything. But the ones that I have, that my heart are on are the ones that, you know, like they decide to go for their passions and the things that they love and it failed. And because I empathize a lot with that stories because I reflect a lot in that stories, but also are also sad for me because I reflect on them. Like, you know, like I feel like a lot of closeness to them in that way, but also have a that kind of stories have a lot of like you know, ups and downs in terms of storytelling. And that's also exciting because are not playing, because they are looking all the time and changing, and also personal life comes in, and, you know, are very complete stories in that way.
Yeah, I can imagine that. There's a really story arc in those presentations then. I can also imagine, and I just got to ask, I'm sorry for doing that. It must have happened that someone came to you and says, hey, I'm going to do X, Y, Z. And with all your expertise and knowledge now, you're like, oh man, this is bound to go wrong. I mean, I know this is, you're doing it wrong. Does that happen? And how do you deal with it? Do you scream at the person and say, no, don't do it? Or, I mean, you have to let people make their own mistakes, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's difficult to, when you say to your friend, like, don't try with that girl because it's not going to end well.
Yeah, it's
the same feeling. It's the same feeling because they are exciting about their projects. They think they have a good idea. Probably they have a good idea. I don't know. Like, depends on the case. But, or they are super sure that it's going to work because they have the, I don't know, like, depends on the context. So I just decide to, like, to make some notes about their projects in the best way possible. Like, I think you have to take care of this, or I have to be focused on this, or be aware of this, because this is a huge problem right now from my perspective. Or some of them are different because they're like trying a lot and really like shaping the project, and they're like shaping and changing things in their project, whatever. And at the end, like, when they launch, it's not necessary that product or whatever, you know, like, they work that much in the product that now it's not good for the market, for example. Or sometimes it's like, go and just do it. And sometimes it's like, try it more and define the product, or depends. But yeah, it happens a lot when I say, like, no, this is not going to happen. This is not going to work. But I don't have anything. I cannot invest myself in that kind of things because it's difficult to have like a good approach or the perfect approach, you know?
Yeah, there can be 10 people doing that exact thing and they're all failing. And then the 11th person comes to you like, oh my God.
Exactly.
And just by sheer determinism, that person succeeds, you know? And who are you to... Yeah. So it's, to conclude this topic, predicting success and failure, is it possible?
I don't think so. It's, people sometimes like tell me that we are like experts in failure, but yeah, I think I'm gonna fail somehow. And so even when I can listen, I can analyze data, I can understand the market, I don't know, like, I have this failure project for 10 years and I'm gonna fail in the future myself. So I don't know if that answered the question, but like, of course you can like be more informed about everything and you can predict some things, you know, and that's information, it's clue in these cases.
Yeah,
because sometimes, as you said, like, the same 10 projects fail and the 11th had success. Why, you know, how you can predict that?
Yeah, because
I don't know, he markets perfect, the project was perfectly marketed, or I don't know, have a lot of
external circumstances.
But what
I take away from you in this discussion is that you have to be agile, so always like be adapting to environments.
Yeah.
But it also means that you have to be open to yourself and say, hey, this isn't working. And if it isn't working, then acknowledge that, like, and share it with other people to have like that catharsis and distinct, put some distance between you and the thing that failed, so that you can learn from it better and then move on. I think if I have to summarize our discussion, that's what I take away from it.
Totally.
While researching this podcast, I came upon your latest press release, which for me was all about the value of IDs. So this press release talked about copycats.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea of the concept of fuck up nights is not something that is distinctly unique, or basically anyone can come up with it. And turns out that people do. Can you talk a little bit about what the copycats is and also about the defendability of ideas that you can have and how you deal with that?
It's an interesting topic for us in Fuck Up Nights, because we had this quoting, problems from the beginning, you know, because it's not necessarily a problem. But the idea that we came out in this barbecue where we were drunk, as we came out with it, yeah, a lot of people can, you know, have the same experience or something similar. And basically, or probably, we create the industry of failure, or we were some of the beginners of that industry. I don't know exactly, but and we are okay with that, because after we create the concept and then the movement and then a business about it, and you know, like, we want to make industry, and we need industry to thrive. Yeah, like, because if we don't have industry, we are just like, you know, one crazy person like doing his own. But if we create industry, we are a group of people, and we create a necessity for the market, and we show more the necessity to the world, basically. Yeah. The only problem, and because we were like, as you say, a global phenomenon, and a lot of people know about us, take the idea and use the idea to start something similar about failure. Could be whatever, something similar, you can name it. Actually, the problem for us came out with when people start using our name and and some of our also graphic designs, or even the logo or whatever, you know, like, the problem that we have with that copycats that are using our logo and our name is that they are confusing the audience, because they are probably saying whatever they want to say about failure and about their process of failure. And I'm okay with that. I'm happy that they have their own process of thinking about failure, but they are using our name. They are saying that in our name. So for us, that's actually the reason of the pre-release. And we have other chapters in Austria and other chapters in Germany. And we were talking as a community, these guys are using the name and the brand without permission, and with just because they want to do it, and how we manage that, you know, like, how what's the defendability of this, and how we defend the brand. The first step that we have with that is community also, because we are stronger as a community than just one person in Germany or in Austria. So yeah, we have our brand registered. We can use that also. We have the registration in Germany or in Austria that are the problems we are having now. So we have a way to defend it legally. We don't want legal fights or legal wars. We are not into that. No. We can do it. Like, you know, if we want, we can do it. But we bet more on the community and the goodwill of people, because we start like that, and we are a goodwill organization. And we try to do that. Like, even we are a business, we try to maintain our essence of be a good community and a good group of people trying to change a paradigm about failure.
And where do you see Fuck Up Nights going in the future?
The most obvious answer is trying to regrow from to 300 cities and more, and then like try to become bigger and bigger. The only reason because of that is we have to keep the concept of Fuck Up Nights alive, you know, in terms of our main purpose is to change the paradigm of failure. And if we are present in more cities and listened by more people, and if we evangelize more people about failure, that purpose is going to be, it's going to become real, no? And I always say that our main purpose of as Fuck Up Nights organization that we want to do that is to disappear as an organization, because if we are not needed anymore in the world, is because we managed to achieve our goals. So yeah, I think being in more and more places, more corporations, like, we work a lot with NGOs, big NGOs like UN or UNICEF, all the global brands around the world. And that's interesting, because we are changing the culture of work inside the corporations that are like kind of evil. And then you can listen to the CEOs talking about their failures and being vulnerable. That's something that for us is crazy, and we want to do more and more that. I don't know. The idea is to create a better world in that way.
I think that's a very nice closing of this interview, to create a better world. Change the paradigm of failure. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Carlos, thank you very much for being here with me today, sharing your story. I'm pretty sure we're going to see each other again in a future episode, season 3, 4, 5. Because I got a few things out of this where I think this requires a follow-up, but not for this podcast. Carlos, Fuck Up Nights, changing the paradigm of failure. And when that's done, then we can close the organization because mission achieved.
Exactly.
But so far, we still got a lot of work ahead of you guys. And I wish you a lot of luck with it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Florian, for the invitation. It was a very nice conversation.
And there you have it, another inspiring episode of the Ideate with Florian podcast. As always, I encourage you to visit our website at ideatewithflorian.com. That is ideatewithflorian.com. Here you will find links related to this episode as well as other episodes. My name is Florian Horna, and I hope this story inspired you. Thank you for joining me, and until next time.